When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is 7-5 again. Oh, no.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Random Troy Radio, episode 537, coming to you on Wednesday, May 1st. We're going to talk about the latest in USC football, including looking back at the 2024 NFL Draft. Talk about some basketball, and introduce you to a brand new segment that we're super pumped about to start to get to know some of the Big Ten opponents that USC will have, Big Ten rivals, if you will. All that and more here on this episode. As always, you can follow us at Rain of Troy on Twitter, email address rainoftroy@fansire.com, phone number 818-643-7227, Second Whisper and Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joining along with my co-host here in the Rain of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia D'Artola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. Draft weekend's over.
It is.
How excited about that are you?
Quite excited, except I have now learned to not do the thing that I have done for years now, where I say, well, now that the draft's over, it's going to get a lot more quiet for me as a sports writer. That's a big fat lie, and I know that now, so I'm not going to lie to myself anymore. So it's nice to have the NFL draft in the rearview mirror. Now the attention completely goes to NBA playoffs, MLB regular season, NHL playoffs, and, college football shenanigans wherever they arise.
Yeah. It's already May. It's crazy that it's already May. Hockey season ends tonight.
We can't say it's going to be May anymore.
No, because it's May 1st. It's May Day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Big day in Berkeley, right? May Day. We can't talk about Cal anymore.
We can't talk about Cal. We were just having this conversation with our friend Kenneth Martin about how it's weird how news happens to like Arizona State or Arizona, and I see it and go like, oh, I should log that in my head for like future discussion. But then I have to remember, no, I don't have to care if Arizona or Arizona State brings in a transfer or loses a transfer or something happens to them. I don't have to care if something happens to Cal or Stanford or Oregon State or Washington State for that matter, or Colorado or Utah for that matter. Mm-hmm. It's pretty, pretty wild to have this be upon us.
Yeah. And we're super pumped about the prospects of learning about new teams. So, keep your radio dialed, keep your iPhone plugged in, your YouTube, streaming, whatever it is. And we'll be back later to talk about a big 10 minutes. 10 minutes in which we look at USC's new opponents. So look forward to that. But let's get to the news, shall we? All right, let's start with transfer news for the Trojans in football. The Trojans have got in new wide receiver Jay Fair. 2 years of eligibility, 5'11", 186 as a wide receiver. Alicia, this means that all of his catches, all of his receptions are fair catches?
Yes. Yes, Jay Fair comes out of Auburn. He was their second leading receiver last year. So, at worst, this is a depth piece. It could also be that he comes into his own a little bit more, but as at USC, in this offense, which is substantially a better offense than Auburn's offense. But, you know, I think it's a good addition when we were coming out of camp and looking at this roster and saying, you know, the wide receiver group, to a man, you love them, but also there's only like 8 of them. You need more receivers. And this is an addition here. I wouldn't be surprised if perhaps there were maybe additional additions for that particular position. But seems like a good sort of veteran addition for USC at that position.
Yeah, 2 straight weeks in which the Trojans add to the receiving core. Of course, Kyle Ford is back after a wayward year over in Westwood. The Trojans also get Georgia Southern kicker Michael Lance. Georgia Southern, Alicia, you know what that means?
It's on the recommendation of Clay Helton.
Hello.
I sort of imagined to myself, like, was there a conversation at any point between the former USC head coach and the now committed and signed, I believe, Georgia Southern kicker about USC at any point? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe. Who knows? I don't know what their relationship was like. But yeah, he made 23 of 28 attempts last year. He was 45 for 45 from extra points. USC needed help at kicker. The kicking situation this past season was not particularly reliable. So at worst, again, you get competition. At best, you got a new starting kicker, and that's always a good thing. But I did want to say, before we move on from the transfers in discussion, I did want to point out one thing about Jay Fair. He was Auburn's leading receiver. Do the folks at home want to guess how many yards the leading receiver at Auburn had in 2023, if Jay Fair was their second leading receiver?
Are you going to tell us how many he had?
Jay Fair had 31 catches for 324 yards.
Mm-hmm.
He was their second leading receiver in terms of receptions.
Yeah.
How many yards did Auburn's leading receiver
Let's go 426.
Have? 38 catches, 394 yards.
Wow.
We were talking about Kyle Ford as, like, it would be great if he was more than what he's been in his college career so far, but it's possible he's just a 250, 300-yard guy.
Yeah.
He's just a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Auburn, their leading receiver, was just a guy. Like, it's pretty,
well, the interesting wild thing is, I saw a comment on Reddit that was talking about how crazy it is that Auburn has so much depth at receiver that they can lose a guy to SC. Now that you say this, I'm starting to wonder if that's sarcasm, the way it's put together. But either way, I think that, you know, adding another body there at receiver, someone who's, you know, versatile, 5'11", 186, you can play all over the field. I think it's going to be a good spot for SC to be able to have that another receiver there. Yeah, so Fair and Lance are in, the receiver and the kicker. Three outgoing dudes. Ciara Wright, aka Little LeBron James from Space Jam 2 or whatever that movie was. That I never watched.
I certainly did not watch that movie. Yeah.
It was a perfect movie. It didn't need to be remade.
That's
right?
My feeling is that there are a lot of movies that simply do not need to be remade, and yeah. Space Jam was one of them. And I had no interest in watching the new one.
Yeah. So either way, he is in the transfer portal. Dejan Lafitte has committed to Fresno State, and Tre'Quan Fagans, after transferring to USC from Alabama, is now on his way to UCF to be a Golden Knight.
Yeah, Ciara Wright was a starter for USC at one point. It is theoretically a loss, but at the same time, this is not necessarily new. It's him going into the transfer portal is only a surprise because that means he intends to continue his football career, where there was a question of whether or not he was going to focus on acting or sort of what his future with USC was going to hold in that sense. So I sort of wasn't planning to have him in that corner room this year, but it still is a shame to lose a player who had some potential from a USC perspective. So, you know, wish him well. We'll see where he lands and what he's doing there. But yeah, the rest, Dejan Lafitte is a loss just because USC needs everybody they can get on the defensive line. But hopefully reinforcements are coming in the transfer portal. So that is sort of a wait and see how costly that particular transfer out is.
Yeah, we will see how it all comes to be with those guys. Let's talk about basketball really quick before we get to the NFL draft. The women's basketball team is setting up to be legitimately maybe a title front runner next year.
Definitely a title front runner.
SC already has Juju Watkins, but
the best player in the country left.
They went out and got Stanford's Kiki Iriafin, who is projected to potentially be the number one pick in the 2025 WNBA draft. She's moving over to SC from Stanford. And they also got Oregon State's Talia von Olhoffen to commit as a transfer as well. SC is just sort of raking in all the big gets.
USC's roster going into this next season is now essentially a Pac-12 All-Star team. These were two of the best individual players in the Pac-12. I want to say Kiki Iriafin was the whatever the award for the top power forward in college women college basketball is, which I don't know the name of the award, but I believe she got it. These are huge transfer gets, and that's in addition to Juju Watkins and the players that USC had coming back in the first place, and USC bringing in the number one ranked recruiting class in women's basketball arriving this year. This roster is absolutely loaded, and I think that it is fair to say that they are gunning for a national title.
Yeah,
with that collection of players, I think the only thing that holds you back is theoretically style fits, chemistry, all that kind of stuff. But you've got, you know, several months here to work that out, to put that together and see how it all works out. I mean, it feels even better knowing that USC thrived this past season in part with a bunch of high-level transfers. So they've done this before.
Mm-hmm.
These are even higher-level transfers. We'll see how they mesh. But I mean, USC was already a number one seed. Coming back, you got to think you're shooting for number one overall. You're shooting for national title.
Yeah, Iriafin won the Katrina McClain Award given to the nation's top power forward. Also, All Pac-12 first teamer, All Pac-12 first most improved player of the year. Averaged 19.4 points for the Lady Cardinals. So big get for SC, and suddenly Stanford really is a farm for USC's transfers.
Yeah.
to come on over.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to the NFL draft. The NFL draft, of course, went down last weekend. Thursday night was the first round. And as we all expected, Caleb Williams, USC's Heisman Trophy winning quarterback and starter for the last 2 years, went number one overall to the Chicago Bears, the Bears, 1-1, number one, joining a long list of Trojans historically to go number one overall. Of course, Carson Palmer, O.J. Simpson, Keyshawn Johnson, Ronieri. Yeah. The list goes on and on, and Caleb Williams adds to that. Kalen Bullock goes to the Texans in the third round, along with Marshawn Lloyd to the Packers. Jarrett Kingston, sixth round, to the 49ers. The seventh round, three Trojans got picked. Brendan Rice, the Chargers, and then Solomon Bird to the Texans, and Taj Washington to the Dolphins. The undrafted guys, Justin Dietich to the Rams, Austin Jones to the Commanders, Christian Roland Wallace to the Chiefs, Keon Barnes to the Titans, and Tyrone Telenny was the third overall pick to Saskatchewan, the Rough Riders, in the global draft for the CFL. The third overall pick.
Yeah, pretty good for Tyrone Telenny. You know what? As soon as I saw that, too, I thought to myself, he's like, that's a good landing. Like, he feels like a quintessential CFL kind of dude. Like, I could see him having a long CFL career. Like, that's, you know, obviously everyone aims for the NFL. They want to be at the highest level. But yeah, to be able to play football for a living is still a pretty cool gig if you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
And the CFL is a great place to do it, too. It's certainly a lot better than trying your luck in some place like the USFL or whatever that seems to not pay people every other week. So, yeah, good for him. And good for all the guys who are getting their shot, getting their opportunity. We'll see how many of those stick. We'll see how the draftees do in their off seasons. But this was a lot of – I mean, I don't know that I expected USC to get – seven guys drafted this year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that you want guys being drafted earlier than the seventh round.
Sure. Three of them got picked in the seventh round. Yeah. Half the class.
Yes. But for instance, Brendan Rice to the Chargers is a great landing spot for Brendan Rice. That's the Chargers wide receiving group is just miserable. He's going to have opportunities. He's going to be catching passes from Justin Herbert.
I think it's a good spot for the Chargers. Good spot for him to have an opportunity there. I would rather not get drafted than be drafted in the seventh round.
That's fair. I'm weird that I would want to be able to say that I got drafted. I'm totally with you. Sure. If I ended up in a position where the Brendan Rice is in, I'd be very grateful that I got drafted at all.
For sure, 100%.
But you're right. Like, if you're getting picked 241st, like Taj Washington, like, you know, you might as well be an undrafted free agent. But at the same time, when teams use a draft pick on you, even a seventh-round pick, they don't necessarily want to cut you loose as easily as they would an undrafted free agent.
Right.
And there's also something about being able to say, like, you were drafted. Your name was said on the draft stage. I think that matters for something.
Yeah, and the Trojans officially have 530 of those guys all time. Second only to your alma mater, Notre Dame, at 532. But Caleb Williams going number one, as we mentioned, the sixth Trojan to go number one, which breaks a tie with Georgia, Notre Dame, and Oklahoma. Lincoln Riley's three number one overall picks, also a record for an individual head coach. Let's talk about Caleb Williams going to the Bears. I think, like, this to me, I know historically Bears quarterbacks have been as reliable as toothpicks building a skyscraper, but this feels like the right spot for him. Like, he could potentially a generational talent at quarterback. If he ends up working out with the Bears, I think he's better than Justin Fields. I really like Justin Fields with the Bears, but if he works out there, he's gonna have a statue. He's gonna have every record the Bears have ever had. Like, nobody will love him more than the people of Chicago if it all works out. Not the greatest place of all time compared to, say, where Mahomes landed by having Andy Reid, just the coaching staff that, you know, Mahomes was able to luck into. So it's not the perfect scenario in that case. But I think the Bears are putting pieces together. And for them to match Caleb Williams with Rome Odunze from, Washington and at number 9 or number 10, wherever it was, like, that was a sort of a perfect little pair for them on offense. Finally, prioritizing the pieces that their quarterback can get, which was, wasn't that the knock with Justin Fields? They didn't have anybody around him. Now Caleb Williams has DJ Moore and Rome Odunze.
Yeah, they've upgraded. I saw a tweet the other day that was talking about, had a list of all of the guys, the skill position players from last year's team or the last couple of years' teams, and what the 2024 skill position players will be. And to a man, you can legitimately say that they upgraded at every position, essentially. It's a good spot to land in. If you're going to go number one overall, this is a better spot to land than most number one overall picks, because mm-hmm. it's a number one
major market.
Well, number one, major market, great city, like best Chicago, city in the world. Chicago, incredible city to just go to and live in. Number two or three, whatever. You went to a team that was picking number one overall, not because they earned the number one overall pick, because they had traded for the number one overall, because the number one overall pick had come to them from a previous trade
mm-hmm.
that just worked out brilliantly in their favor. This was not a team that was so bad that they were picking number one overall. They were 7-10. They were very mid, but they were still 7-10 and still semi-functional, semi-competitive. Like you said, they've added weapons. To add Rome Odunze is such a great addition for Caleb Williams just from the get-go, in addition to DJ Moore already being there.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that gives me pause about the landing spot for Caleb Williams and my sense of whether or not Caleb Williams will be a good quarterback, because my feeling in general with quarterbacks is that when you're talking about the guys that are up at that level, very rarely is somebody a bust because they could not play football. They obviously could play football. It's about where they landed, the circumstances they landed. All things being equal, if all of those quarterbacks are putting in the effort that you expect from an NFL-level quarterback, which is not always what you get, but let's say that everyone's doing that, the difference between a Mahomes and, you know, pick a quarterback, a Mac Jones, is, or Justin Fields necessarily, is the situation that they land in. And as we said, in personnel, Caleb Williams has landed beautifully, but he's also landed with, you know, his offensive coordinator is Luke Getsy, his coach is Matt Eberflus. I'm not convinced by either of them.
If you didn't know what an Eberflus was, what would you think?
I would think it was like
a bird,
like a flower, like not a flower, but like a plant.
Maybe a medical utensil.
Yes, definitely a something that was involved in stitching of when, like, at the end of surgery, like, give me that Eberflus, and I wish I felt like this was you landed with Andy Reid situation.
Sure.
I worry that's not the case. But
Eberflus also doesn't seem like someone who's going to be there for the long haul anyways.
He's entering his third year.
It's a do or die season for him.
If things go wrong, like, Caleb Williams will have a new head coach and a new offensive coordinator ASAP. So, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, that's when they bring in Cliff Kingsbury. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
All right, let's get to our new segment, ladies and gentlemen. Let's talk about the Big Ten. It is a segment called A Big 10 Minutes, where we're going to talk about for exactly 10 minutes about every new Big Ten school that USC has. There's 14 of them that SC has new conference opponents. We're going to go over these with the next 14 episodes of the show. We're going to start with Illinois, who is number one in alphabetical order in the Big Ten. which surprisingly feels like an upset. If you'd have, you know, put a gun to my head and said, what's the number one school in the first alphabetically, I wouldn't have said Illinois.
As a kid with a last name that began with D, being usually number 9, 10, or 11 in all of my elementary school classes when we were assigned numbers like that. I don't know if you had that experience in your classes, but...
I was a C, yeah. I was always like three or four.
Yeah. For I to be first is pretty damn funny.
Yeah. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen.
A big 10 minutes.
Here we go. The University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, originally founded in 1867 as, quote, the University of Illinois. They added the Urbana-Champaign in 1977 when they started to build out the sort of Illinois University network, so like UIC. Have you heard of UIC, like, the Flames?
It's like UT Austin. Like,
yeah, or UCLA.
Yeah.
Yeah. But... Illinois, of course, is the Berkeley of the UI system there in Champaign, Illinois. They play at Memorial Stadium, which, by the way, used to host the Chicago Bears when they were redoing Soldier Field for a couple of years. Remember that? Remember them playing in Champaign?
At all. Like, no.
2003 or something like that?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, it was a fun time. They're the Fighting Illini, and Alicia, you might wonder, what is a Fighting Illini?
I always just figured it was like the Utah Utes, where you just sort of took the surname, I mean, the origin name of the state and just said, that's an us.
Well, I mean...
It would be like the USC Californians.
I mean, yes, but you could say that the inverse happened.
Okay.
But according to the university, it means nothing.
Okay.
This is from Wikipedia. The Illini WEC, Illinois Confederation, or Illini, were made up of 12 to 13 tribes who lived in the Mississippi River Valley. The term Illini, in reference to campus activities, appears to be first mentioned in January 1874, when the weekly newspaper changed its name to the Student, from the Student to the Illini. An editorial in the first edition renamed the newspaper indicated that Illini was a new term. They just invented it. During the late 19th century and beginning of the 20th century, it was used to refer to students, faculty, staff, and the alumni of the university, as well as the campus as a whole, basically as it is now. Of course, many NCAA and high school mascots bearing reference to First Nation people have changed their names. However, the University of Illinois maintains its position that the Illini nickname does not refer to the First Nation inhabitants of the same land. It is not the same, Alicia. It has nothing to do with it.
Okay, Illinois.
Nothing.
Yeah. Nothing. Sure. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Here's one weird Illinois fact for you. Since 2015. All Illini football games have been broadcast in Mandarin Chinese.
They just have a... Does Champaign, Illinois have a very big Chinese population?
I think it's the student body. They have a lot of
international students. International students.
SC does. Most universities do, right? Yeah. And they broadcast games Mandarin Chinese, which is kind of neat. Let's get to the fight song and the lyrics, Alicia. We talked about in the opening here. We screwed up. We said that SC was getting rid of Cal. Cal no longer part of SC's conference stuff. I'm wrong, because Illinois' fight song, Oski Wow Wow. These, my friend, are the lyrics. Old Princeton yells her tiger, Wisconsin her varsity, and they give the same old rah, rah, rah at each university. But the yell that always thrills me and fills my heart with joy is the good old Oski Wow Wow that they yell at Illinois. Oski Wow Wow, Illinois, our eyes are all on you. Oski Wow Wow, Illinois, wave your orange and your blue, rah, rah. When the team trots out before you, every man stand up and yell, back the team to gain a victory, Oski Wow Wow, Illinois.
That was beautiful. That was a dramatic reading by Michael Castillo, beautifully. You convinced me that Oski Wow Wow is actually a cool thing to say during the course of that dramatic reading.
It sounds like Bum Chicka Wow Wow. Like, it's interesting.
It is.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about 10 notable alums of the University of Illinois. You got to start with number one, Hugh Hefner. An Illini.
The man himself.
The man himself, yeah. Mm. Steve Chen, the co-founder of YouTube. Thank you, Mr. Chen.
Mr. Chen.
For hosting us here. Larry Ellison, the guy who founded Oracle. And clearly the number one reason behind, well, number three reason behind Max Verstappen and Adrian Newey for Red Bull's success. Cesar Pelli, an Argentine guy who designed the Petronas Towers.
Do I know what the Petronas Towers are?
Yeah, Kuala Lumpur. They used to be the tallest towers in the world.
Okay, I got you. I didn't know that was their name.
And also, Fazlur Khan, a guy who designed the Sears Tower, don't call it anything else.
I'm learning that architecture is a big thing at the University of
Illinois. Big thing. Also, Shad Khan, also an Illini, the owner, of course, of the Jacksonville Jaguars and Fulham FC. Went to Illinois.
That's a guy, yeah.
How about this? Scott Spezio, the front man of the band Sandfrog.
Scott Spezio sounds like something I recognize. Sandfrog does not.
At least it's Scott Spezio. Angel legend Scott Spezio?
I don't know history of baseball, Michael.
He had the big RBI double in Game 6 of the 2001... World Series, 2002 World Series.
Did I pay attention to sports in 2002? I did not.
You know, we joke about you being Cheryl, but I think you might have been Coach Boone's daughter at that time. All right, three more for you. Susie Orman, the financial lady on TV. She's always great. Shel Silverstein, the author. Expelled. Did not graduate.
Expelled from Illinois. Oh.
Expelled, well, yeah.
They don't get to claim him then.
And last but not least, Stephen B. Sample. You ever heard of him?
There's our USC connection.
Yeah. Ever heard of him?
I have.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Alisa, what is your preconceived notions of Illinois?
I have none. I don't think I've ever interacted with an Illinois fan. Wow. I'm sure USC fans have because of they came out for the Rose Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have even, I don't even know like what the vibe of their fan base is. Like, are they self-loathing? Are they
self-loathing, pessimistic? Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of Cubs fans. I, of course, big Cubs fan. I follow a lot of people who went to U of I and they're all self-loathing for sure. That is the vibe.
Okay. College
sports.
It.
I mean, Chicago sports in general, embody that same sort of vibe. Who's the first athlete or person that comes to mind when you think of Illinois?
Lovie Smith.
Oh, with the beard.
Who was the quarterback when they came to the Rose Bowl?
Juice Williams.
Yeah, that's Juice Williams. Yeah, if I had to think of a player. Yeah,
all-time series against USC. 13 games all-time. The Trojans have won 11 of them, the most recent. The 2008 Rose Bowl, which the Trojans won 49-17. Big moments in that game, the bounce pass to Joe McKnight.
Yes. One of the great
instances where, like, if you're new around here, you don't know about the bounce pass, you're like, how is there a bounce pass? Go look it up. Insane. Yeah. Rest in peace, Joe McKnight.
If you're Gen Z, stop now. Go look at YouTube. Joe McKnight bounce pass. I'm sure you'll find it.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Raymond Lugas. Obviously illegal hit today on Juice Williams.
Very ejectable.
Yeah, that happened. In 1996, R.J. Sauer had a 97-yard TD catch from Matt Coffler in Champaign. The Illini have won 5 national titles that they claim, 1914, 1919, 1923, 27, and 51. Haven't won the big since 2001, so it's been a while there. The next time USC and Illinois will lock horns, of course, will be 2025. Their current head coach, Brett Bielema, going into their fourth season. They were 5-7 last year. They do return 10 starters. 5 on offense, 5 on defense. Do not have to worry about the Illini this year because SC doesn't play them this year, but New the fault. Alicia, you got 40 seconds here. What are your last thoughts about Illinois?
Brett Bielema was a big hire for them. He's not doing a terrible job in my estimation, but not necessarily doing a great job. So will he be the head coach?
They had a good 2022.
Yeah. Will he be the head coach when they meet in 2025? I would wager yes. Because I don't know that Illinois is in position to...
Expectations aren't insane.
Yes. Get rid of Brett Bielema unless it's an utter, utter, complete disaster. So, yeah. Good for the Illini. A nice enough... seemingly team.
Yeah, there you go. And here goes the buzzer. There you go. 10 minutes.
That was 10 minutes. And we all learned a whole bunch about the Illinois.
We didn't even talk about their colors. Illini. I guess it was in the fight song. Blue and orange.
Well, on our
we didn't even mention Red Grange.
Wow. On our screen, for those watching on YouTube, we've got a big 10 minutes on Illinois, and it's got the blue and the orange, and it's giving you the idea.
Mm-hmm. For sure. All right. Let's get to, some final thoughts here about the week at hand. The Trojans, of course, wrapped up the NFL draft. Spring camp is all over. Any thoughts going into the rest of the sort of off season here? It's sort of like the one of those weird moments where you don't know what, like, it's, you know, the school's wrapping up. Graduate, I guess maybe not graduation's not going to happen, but like that's a whole different side plot we won't discuss. Next thing you know, summer workouts will be here. Where's your mind on the Trojans right now?
Yeah, I feel like May is always the most for me. The month where when we actually talk about it being quiet, May is actually true when you're doing USC coverage.
Right.
There might be recruiting stuff, certainly in the era of the transfer portal. The transfer portal is now closed in the sense that you can't enter the portal from here on out, which means essentially unless there are people who have gotten into the portal and the paperwork takes, you know, a couple days to process and they haven't been leaked yet. Short of something like that happening, the guys who have left USC's program have left and you're sort of going to go into fall camp with the guys that are there. But you can still add players at any point from the transfer portal. And I expect USC to try to be aggressive. There are some guys that USC has been hosting, big defensive lineman, one guy out of Michigan State that would be a huge, huge, huge addition for USC if they could pull it off. You know, there's still a lot of work to do for USC to get this roster ready to go for the coming season. I think there's rightly a lot of positivity about the performance of the defense in spring camp, the perceived improvement of the defense. There's a lot of hope on the offensive side that...
I actually think this is a case of optimistic, Alicia.
Yeah, I mean, I actually feel quite optimistic coming into this season. I think that the defense will be considerably better, and I think that the offense, while it will take a step back because Caleb Williams isn't running at the show anymore, I just can't bet against Lincoln Riley, who has always put together a competitive offense, even if it's not at the level that Caleb Williams was able to operate it under. So I think there's reason to be very, very optimistic. The reasons to worry are the things that I need to see USC address in the portal, right here. The offensive line needs depth. There's not depth there. The defensive line needs depth and starting level players. There's gaps there. The next couple of months leading into fall camp, if USC addresses those with two or three really big transfer additions, then suddenly my optimism that things won't be like cratered this year will turn into optimism that USC can be actually competitive against a difficult schedule. But if things stand as they currently are, then going into fall camp, I will still have a lot of questions about not necessarily whether USC could win any given game, more so, can this roster hold up across a difficult schedule, knowing that injuries happen, knowing the ebbs and flows of some players being sort of on it and off it and all that kind of stuff. So
mm-hmm.
There's still a lot to sort out, and it's going to be really telling. As quiet as I expect, relatively quiet as I expect the next couple of months to be, there are a lot of really, really critical things that need to happen. So,
yeah, I think this season is just going to be so wild from so many different perspectives. I mean, it's a different landscape of college football, right? The makeup is going to be so much different. The roster is going to be drastically different than it was last year. SC obviously doesn't have Caleb Williams at quarterback. How do you replace a Heisman winner? Last time SC did that at quarterback, it panned out pretty well because they just replaced him with another one, right? I guess 2 times ago, right? With Leonard replacing Palmer. But mm-hmm. you even look at John David Booty. John David Booty came in and won 2 Rose Bowls after Matt Leinart left, right? So, I think that if you're able to plug in and play with the system that you have, which Lincoln Riley has, I think that that's got to give you some optimism for the Trojans going forward as well. But I think so much of this season is just going to be an unknown, because we talked about it. Like, yes, on paper, it looks scary. It sounds scary to have the schedule that SC has when they got to play Penn State. They got to go to Ann Arbor and play Michigan. They go up to Montlake and play Washington on the road. They play the 2 national title winning team. I mean, national title opponents, foes on the road. But yeah, both of those teams are drastically different. The transfer portal has made everything so crazy this year, not just for SC, but for everybody, the coaching carousel, all of that, that, and you add in the conference realignment stuff. I genuinely think that anyone is sort of lying to you if they think that they know how everything's going to pan out. Like, I
agree.
This is a season in which, if you know, I sort of like how the SC's roster's coming together for sure. But if you told me that they were 5-7 or 12-0, I'd be like, I mean, either one's possible. Like, yeah, it is so.
I saw
insane how you know, wild everything could go.
I saw a tweet that was asking, like, what's the biggest wild card team in college football this year? And I had too many answers to answer that question, too many valid answers. I think USC is a huge wild card team. Mm-hmm. I think Michigan is a huge wild card team. Washington, huge wild card team. You know, there's so many teams that can they be as good as they were last year? How, like, the upheaval with the coaching and everything like that. Like, it's so difficult to project.
Right.
With the exception, I think, of, I mean, Alabama's a wild card team too. With the exception of Georgia and Ohio State, I suppose Texas, it's hard to look at any teams out there and say with any certainty
that you know what they are.
That you know what they are, you know they'll right. be good, you know they'll be competing for a playoff spot.
Yeah, I think you can ink Ohio State in to be no worse than 10-2.
Yeah. That's who they are. That's who they have been.
Right. Yeah.
And nothing changed for them.
And most likely 11-1, right? Like, yeah, that, because that's just who they are.
Yeah.
You can do the same thing for Georgia. It's wild to say that Texas is in that category.
Yeah.
But it's less about Texas and it's more about everybody else, right? Because
who is
you
it?
Look at the consistency yeah. of Texas from this year to last year to this year, whatever. They haven't had the big, you know, boat rock that everybody else has had in the same way. You got Arch Manning coming around as well.
It would be very, very Texas, though, for them to be bad this year.
It would be.
It would be Texas.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It feels weird to put them in that category. I think truly it's only Georgia and Ohio State that you can bank on. But like
LSU, another huge wild card team.
Yeah. And
just the enormous. On USC schedule alone are huge wild card teams. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame is always a wild card team because of the nature of Notre Dame.
Right.
So, yeah, it's...
This is why I don't like the notion that, like, this you know, this schedule is guaranteed to be treacherous. It might be. It might very well be. But It also might not be who you like. It's possible that Nebraska is the team that is the scary one because it's year two under Rule, and you know what Rule does in year two. Like,
could you see this being a 2016 schedule? Was it 2016 or
2016?
Was it 2016?
We looked at November and said that November was going to be insane because it was Notre Dame, UCLA, and Oregon, and all three of those teams had losing records.
Terrible, and it turned out that the best team on USC's schedule after the initial
was Washington.
Was Washington? Yeah, on an island there, and then Colorado was the best team that USC faced aside from them.
Mm-hmm.
After the non-conference slate.
Yeah,
so. I mean, it could certainly be a situation where we expect the road trips to Michigan and Washington to be hugely difficult, and maybe those are the easy ones. And like you said, like, it's the, you know, I mean, people already think that Penn State might give USC problems, but, you know, who knows? It could be, it could be Minnesota. Could be Nebraska.
You never know.
You never know.
We're going to have to find out where is the Big Ten Corvallis, right? Like, I think a lot of people think that it's Iowa, but I think Iowa is the Big Ten Utah. You know that that's going to be a treacherous place to go.
Yes.
Big Ten Corvallis probably is West Lafayette, and SC doesn't have to go to Purdue this year, so...
On USC's current... I agree with you. I think circle Purdue is that... on USC's current thing, it's like that trip to Maryland just feels like a buckle up. It's a trip to Maryland.
Yeah. Hey, it's basically DC.
Yeah.
Close enough. All right. Let's get to the mailbag and wrap this thing up.
You've got mail.
All right. A couple of questions here, and then we'll.
We'll got to do I Married a Serial Killer.
I don't got one this week.
Yes, you do.
We
saved it from last week.
I thought that, and then I went back and I realized
you had already done that.
I had already done that.
Oh,
one.
Yeah. Okay. Well, all right.
Do you have one?
Not off the top of my head, but
probably
while we're
not
answering...
because you didn't marry a serial killer.
While we're answering, we'll see if we're going to end up doing it.
All right. Tim in LA says, "Is that the old intro song in the Big Ten Minutes?" Thing I just got a massive nostalgia hit. Yes, it is. We were gonna go with another one. There was gonna be like royalty free YouTube music, but I'm like, but I already have this thing that I have a 17 minute version on my computer that I looped years ago. It's wild because I think that whole guitar riff was something like 26 seconds. And I got it from Freesound, like no attribution, like guitar riff in like 2013 or something. And then just made it into a thing that looped endlessly. That's.
And you wouldn't know it.
You wouldn't know it. Yeah. But big shout out to whoever it was.
Yeah.
I don't know. Greg says, is it fair to say that Josh Henson is in the hot seat, USC's offensive line coach?
It depends on whose hot seat you're talking about. From a fan perspective, absolutely. I think he was already on the hot seat. I think if USC's offensive line isn't really good this year, people are going to want to, throw Josh Henson out of the program. Realistically, I do not think that the results of this season are likely to result in Josh Henson being on a hot seat, even if the offensive line struggles. And that is simply because when you look at the makeup of this offensive line, there are a lot of the guys that Josh Henson has recruited and developed are still sophomores at the oldest. The depth on this offensive line was so poor that this was always going to be the year when things were the most shaky if USC didn't bring in a ton of transfers to fill the gaps.
Mm-hmm.
Realistically, I think that you can look at that front five and feel like they're probably going to do okay. If the offensive line has problems, I would wager that injuries have something to do with it.
Yeah.
And if injuries have something to do with it, then Lincoln Riley's not going to look at Josh Henson and say like, oh man, like you screwed up. Like you didn't inherit a offensive line room that was going to give you a ton of depth at this stage in our tenure here. I think there are certainly very valid criticisms of Josh Henson, his recruiting, the ways that USC has filled or not filled this room, whether via transfers or keeping guys from not transferring out or whatever it is. I just don't think that those things are actually actionable in the same way that I didn't think that Lincoln Riley would fire Alex Grinch after, you know, one bad year because of the actual, like, human reasons behind how you don't actually want to fire somebody. Nobody wants to fire somebody. So the threshold by which you fire somebody is actually pretty high in reality. And for Josh Henson, that's going to be the case, even if this year is not maybe the greatest.
Yeah.
That's just being realistic.
Yeah, you mentioned the recruiting stuff. I have a hard time judging him too much on the recruiting stuff, in per se, when the linemen are such a long-winded project. And so much of the stuff, like he was using guys who were in the 2017 class, right? Like, yeah. Voorhees was the guy who got here in 2017, and just left last year, right? So, like, there were the dudes that he had to deal with the fallout of the end of the Clay Helton era personnel wise. And even if he was bringing in 5-star talent, I think you wouldn't necessarily see the dividends of those things paid off until right about now. And yeah, I think you could say that, well, if he would have started to bring in five-star talent from the beginning, you would have those things getting ready to go right about now. And I think that's probably fair to a certain extent, but with the transfer portal being a thing, I don't know. I so much of this has to do with results, and I think last year's offensive line play was so surprisingly bad, strictly because they had been so good the two previous seasons. I'm inclined to say that it can still get back to that level they were before, but it's hard to say that when, like I said, they're sort of at the mercy of where the Clay Helton era was in terms of recruiting there towards the end. So I don't know. We're going to see. Either way, I think you're right. Like, this is going to be a put up or shut up season, because if the offensive line is not good this year, Miller Moss or Jaden Maiava's abilities to succeed drastically, you know, goes down, like, drastically. And then that makes everything else that much harder. And at that point, I think you've got to, you know, cut bait there.
I just think that, like, I think that they would cut bait after a 2025 season where things haven't gone well. I don't think you cut bait after he just brought in an offensive line, like, recruiting class this year with, like, four or five guys that they're looking at.
They already lost the top line.
I mean, that's true, yes. And I think that I think recruiting is definitely where you look at Henson and say, like, are you doing enough? At the same time, like, USC's recruiting strategy has changed considerably since his last big recruiting class. Like, ever since the Tennessee, the ruling that basically said NIL is NIL, it doesn't matter, go for it, go wild, go crazy. Like, mm-hmm. It's felt like USC has said, okay, well, we will invest in high school players now. And that wasn't happening. So, like, can you blame Josh Henson for losing the elite guys if they were losing the elite guys over NIL? Like, I don't know. I think that Josh Henson probably will be able to sit in an office with Lincoln Riley and make the case for him to stay. And Lincoln Riley probably will not make a move. I think the bigger question is, does Josh Henson want to stick around at USC if
hold on, he can
see the writing on the wall?
Because what you're talking about is the probably not making a move because you can buy into what he says. Sounds like what we said about Lincoln Riley a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
But this, I think how Lincoln Riley goes forward is going to be not like uncharted territory completely, but to a certain extent, because we talked about it. He had never failed like he did last year. He had never gotten punched in the face on the football field like SC did. And so he had to respond and, you know, clean house on defense, but also make some tough choices on offense and all that kind of stuff. And he made those tough decisions. He made a lot of personnel changes. He's talked about, like, changing the way that he coaches and manages things and all that. So, yes, you can. I think there's a world in which you can draft up a good argument if the offensive line isn't great this year for keeping Josh Henson, but I don't know that that means that a Lincoln Riley who feels the pressure at USC after what would be three seasons, presumably, of not reaching the high-end expectations if the offensive line doesn't succeed to the way that people want them to. He's probably more in a position where he's backed up against the wall and has to be more ruthless, right? Because if it's not him, it's Henson, right?
Yeah, and I think that's actually an interesting sort of thing that could be set up over the next couple of months, because again, these are recruiting months. These are where you're having visits. You're trying to get guys locked in, and somebody like Henderson on the defensive line is landing some heavy hitting defensive linemen in recruiting that are going to be sort of promised to come in next year. If mm-hmm. you're Josh Henson and you land a couple of whales on the offensive line that you get to point to for the class of 2025, your argument for sticking around gets a lot stronger than a Josh Henson who,
yeah,
the highest ranked offensive line he has committed is, you know, like in the, you know, out of the top 700 or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jamie says, what's it going to say about Henson if Michael Tarquin plays much better at OU than he did at SC? It's not going to be a good data point for him, for sure. Will that be the be all and end all? Like, maybe not, maybe, but either way, that would be a data point that wouldn't go in his favor. And he needs those things to sort of go in his favor, especially since the offensive line has not been the same since Andrew Voorhees wasn't there. So we'll see how that all comes to be there. We'll be back next Wednesday, though, and talk about the next team in the Big Ten to talk about, which is that Indiana?
Should be Indiana.
I think Indiana. Alphabetically. And
yeah, because it's Indiana
and
Iowa.
Then Iowa. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of I's.
Yes.
A lot of I's and M's and N's.
So many M's in the Big Ten. And N's. And,
yeah. Cam is in the chat saying, yo.
Yo.
Here we are about to leave.
Sorry.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll be back next time. Cam, go watch some Seinfeld instead. Or you could just rewind. That works out too. All right. We'll catch you guys next time. Until then, see ya.
See ya.
See ya.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.